Recently, scientists have discovered some very real, practical reasons for putting the sun, or natural daylight, back into our lives. Turns out our bodies are literally hardwired to the sun. That biological clock you've heard about? It's a real thing, and it regulates all sorts of crucial functions in our lives, like sleeping, digesting, even thinking. So, how does this master pacemaker work? How does it keep time for your body? Daylight. Your body clock is set every day by special, newly discovered sensors in your eyes. Russell Foster's the neuroscientist who discovered those receptors. It was a major discovery with some very practical implications.
Yes, lots of practical considerations about having this clock. And one of the perhaps the most obvious is night shift work. About 20% of the working population in the industrialized nations will work some form of night shift. But what's truly extraordinary is that even if you've been on the night shift for 20 years or so, your body clock does not shift with the demands of working at night. What tends to happen is it's locked onto the local light-dark cycle, and so the clock is stuck in this particular position. And so what the night shift worker has got to do is to cognitively override the effects of the clock saying, you know, now is time for bed, now is time for rest. And what you can't possibly expect in the night shift is peak performance. And indeed, the accident rate is significantly higher on the night shift compared to the day shift. And because the body is probably having to activate the stress mechanisms to operate on the night shift, there are a range of problems that have been associated with night shift work. So in some cases, coronary heart disease can be 40% higher in night shift workers compared to day shift workers. The chance of getting a peptic ulcer are 8 times higher in night shift workers compared to day shift workers. So there are some very serious consequences. Most recently, it's been shown that in night shift working nurses, there's a significant increase in breast cancer and colorectal cancer.
That brings us back to this whole business of light as well. Is there any way in which you can use light, as some have suggested, to change the SCN and therefore the body and make adjustments?
Some studies that have been done, in fact in the United States, have shown that if you take night shift workers and you increase the amount of light during the workplace by turning up the lights 4 or 5 times and then hiding them from natural light during the day, their body clocks will adjust to the new light-dark cycle. Under those circumstances, though, many night shift workers prefer not to be adjusted. In fact, there's one group of night shift workers that will adjust to working on the night, and that's people working in the North Sea on those oil rig platforms, where they're working at night and then they're sleeping in the day in metal boxes. And so they see essentially no natural light. And under those circumstances, their clock will adjust to the demands of working at night and the exposure to light at night. But the problem is that when they go on shore leave, they have to spend the first week or so adjusting to the normal light-dark cycle, and they resent the time wasted when they could be out there having fun.
What about the ways in which we seem to expose ourselves naturally to more and more light all the time? Has that had an effect on our internal biological clocks?
What's really fascinating is that, first of all, the biological clock is relatively insensitive to light, certainly compared to the classical visual system. Light at which we could read very comfortably, it would not be sufficient to shift the body clock. In fact, if you look at the amount of natural sunlight, then shortly after dawn, natural light is some 50 to 100 times brighter than average office lighting conditions. And by the time we get to noon, sunlight is some 500 to 1,000 times brighter than average office lighting conditions. And of course, we're not very good at appreciating this huge difference because the eye and the visual system is so good at adapting to these hugely different changes in light intensity. But of course, the biological clock using these new receptors is using a different sort of mechanism, and it's counting the absolute amount of light, and it needs quite a lot of light to shift the clock, certainly compared to the visual system.
Is therefore natural light always the dominant factor? I mean, you could do any kind of change internally, but still it would bow to the superior force of the sun.
Yes, and in fact, it's quite interesting. If you look at people that work outside a lot, you can see that their body clocks are absolutely beautifully entrained to the light-dark cycle. You know, the time that they will wake, go to bed is very, very precise. And indeed, many of the sleep problems associated with the elderly could be that it's not enough exposure to natural light. Some calculations have suggested that the elderly in nursing homes may get less than 2 minutes of natural light out of every 24 hours. And when you give powerful supplementary lighting in the nursing homes, individuals have profoundly improved the sleep-wake pattern of the elderly. And of course, it's tiredness and sleep deprivation that lower our cognitive performance. And I often wonder whether the lowered cognitive performance you get in the elderly is not in part due to the fact of disturbed sleep-wake patterns.
There is another effect of this that I'd really like to talk about because I think that it will be of interest to many people, and that is that the biological clock doesn't simply rule our waking and sleeping. It rules many other functions within the body, and there is a suggestion that we may react differently to medication, for instance, at different times of day.
Yes, the timed application of drugs, I think, is really, really important. I mean, the first thing to say, of course, is that we do all of our drug testing on a nocturnal rodent, such as a mouse or a rat, and we then are extrapolating back to a diurnal species, such as ourselves. And, of course, our body clocks are 12 hours apart. And we know that cell division cycle of many of the organs of the body, such as the liver and the gut, occur at very specific times. Some really interesting studies have been undertaken in rats looking at anti-cancer drugs, and you can give a particular drug at the same dose at one particular time and get 10% mortality. Only 1 in 10 animals will die as a result of the side effects. But if you give that drug 12 hours later, the death rate can go up to 9 out of 10 animals dying, so 90% mortality. So this is the same drug, same concentration, but given at a different time can have profoundly different effects on the well-being of the animal. Now, Rivard and colleagues were looking at ways of the timed delivery of a cocktail of anti-leukemia drugs, and it was shown that if the drug was given in the evening rather than in the morning, there was a 2.5-fold greater chance of long-term survival. I mean, very, very big differences.
It's extraordinary, the leads that this may give us in medicine. I wonder if we could talk just for a moment about the practical thing that this means to those of us who don't have medical conditions, who don't have night shift to work for. Are there ways in which we could try to change our lifestyle in order to adjust to this recognition of the biological clock?
Some very interesting studies have been done in athletes. Now, of course, most of us, even with the best will in the world, are not athletes. But if you're an Olympic swimmer and you are swimming 100 metres, your ability to swim that 100 metres is 2 to 3 seconds faster at 6 to 8 o'clock in the evening than at 6 o'clock in the morning during the training sessions. And so, in fact, many swimming meets are organised to be the late and early afternoon. It's well known that the records are broken in the early evening, late afternoon, compared to the morning. And that's due to the clock-driven rise in core body temperature and increased muscular efficiency and increased blood flow to the muscles. So if you're an athlete and you want to increase muscular performance, then you tend to work in the late afternoon, early evening. Runners, for example, high jumpers, have all been shown to do better at that time of day than at other times. Now, for most of us, of course, we're not worried about fine-tuning muscular efficiency, but certainly the power lunch can be quite effective. Our cognitive performance, our ability to reason and make decisions, is probably reaching its peak between 11 and 1 o'clock in the middle of the day. And so if you have to make important decisions and you're an adult, that might be a good time to make those decisions.
So the practical thing for any of us, whether an athlete or not, is to exercise late in the afternoon. If you're making decisions, to try to do it around the middle of the day. And it also sounds as though we would all benefit by stabilizing our biological clocks by being outside and keeping our eyes open when the sun is out.
I think that's absolutely critical. I think that that's a very good lesson. Be aware that essentially every aspect of our physiology and behavior is being fine-tuned by this internal representation of the day, and we need to take it seriously. And the way that we can consolidate our biological clock and keep the thing stable is by getting regular exposure to nice, bright, natural light. Don't, for goodness sake, look into the sun, but just get out there, walk around if you can. And indeed, many people have found that an early morning walk shortly after sunrise is particularly effective at keeping the biological clock locked onto local time.
Russell Foster is a molecular neuroscientist at the Imperial College in London. For more information about the new science of chronobiology, you can take a look at Foster's recent book, Rhythms of Life.